We are living in a time of ultimate paradox. The time of the greatest distance from God. We live in a time of dispirited humanity. Even the religions themselves of Kali Yuga are dispirited. And now we have reached a point where no one can even have faith anymore in those religions, or even in any alternatives to them. It's remarkable that the central concepts of the great philosophers of the 20th century were concepts such as these. For Heidegger, it was the signifier thrownness. He built his whole philosophy about the fact that we were all thrown into this world without any sense of how we got here, and in a state of lostness, without landmarks, just found ourselves in this strange land, strangers in a strange land. For Karl Jaspers, another great philosopher in Germany during the period of the Nazis, Heidegger became a Nazi, by the way, and Karl Jaspers, whose wife was Jewish, became a very anti-Nazi, but they both had the same philosophy. Because in those days, if you weren't a member of the Nazi Party, you lost your job and you had to leave the country. And so, for whatever justifiable or unjustifiable reasons, he remained as a professor during those years. But his philosophy, regardless of what we think of his politics, is still one of the most profound of the modern time. But Karl Jaspers, for him, the word was shipwrecked. He said, "We're all shipwrecked in this world." For others, the concept and the image was that of being born into a swamp and quicksand. Before we could even take a step, we were already mired in a situation that was untenable. And then burdened by the guilt and other traumas that were put on us that weighed us down so that we couldn't leave that swamp. So unrelenting images of negativity and hopelessness. And even last night in that film that we saw of the Buddhist nuns in Korea, if you think about the questions they were asking in their meditations, where did I come from? Where am I going? Who am I? What is this? A sense of lostness, a sense of not being able to conceive what reality really is. I mean, isn't that what they were meditating on? What is this? Literally, that was their question. What is this all about? And it struck me as I was watching that film last night that it was identical to the question Christ was asking on the cross. Father, why have you forsaken me? It was a sense of forsakenness. That these nuns were trying to do the best in a situation of utter forsakenness, huddling together around the fire in the snow and the cold of winter to survive and to try to figure out in the silence of their own mind, because there was no point even in language, even in talking, to try to figure out what this was all about, but to follow the Buddha's advice and just hope it would come to you if your mind was quiet enough. But who even has that faith that the answer will come? How many today even believe that there is a God who will answer your prayer or your meditation? It's a very rare thing. And most people, even in this room, didn't come here because you had some faith in God, but that you were hopeless of finding any meaning anywhere that could justify your existence. Because it's not only a world without a believable God any longer, but a world without love, without justice, without integrity, without any virtue or value that we can anchor our lives on and say, yes, this is worth living for. So we're in an absolutely hopeless situation. And it struck me while listening to these mantras, this bhakti that was being sung by Krishna Das that I felt he didn't even believe. It was like a wistfulness. Wouldn't it be nice if there were really a Krishna listening, or a Durga, or even Mother Kali, to listen to these prayers? But we're just singing in the wind. There's nobody there who's going to answer these prayers. And I think I find that that sort of wistfulness is there, even in all of the sanghas and ashrams that I visited, except for a few, where there was a sense of almost it being a museum rather than a living faith. It was the best thing one could do, but it wasn't something alive that would result in a true connection to a supreme reality with an electrical force, a pranic energy field that would renew you and fill you and bring you to bliss and wisdom and truth. How many people believe that that is even a possibility? And I think the people who come here not expecting much other than perhaps a group of people holding hands, maybe singing Kumbaya or something like that, but without much faith in anything other than the act itself of some kind of camaraderie in the dark, keeping some candle lit, but without any hope that there's anything beyond that. And that's the sense out there of Kali Yuga, that the night is getting darker and darker all the time. And that people's capacity to hold it together is less and less. And the quiet desperation has now become a desperation that is quite loud, full of bombs and gunshots and murder, suicides, and all kinds of terror and brutality. That the human dispiritedness has now reached a level where one can no longer even maintain the veneer of civilized behavior. There's nothing holding the self together. It's literally flying apart. There's no center. That famous poem by Yeats, "The center cannot hold, the blood-dimmed tide has reached us, and all chaos is now upon us. And what rough beast its hour come round at last slouches toward Bethlehem to be born." That rough beast of the apocalypse, the end of time. And we can feel its thundering footsteps in the distance getting closer and closer. And in this situation, what is there to be done? Who are we? Is it possible to make a connection to that ancient God that once we all believed in, that once we all knew was the basis and the ground of our being and the source of love and of light and of happiness? And that who had created this world for our enjoyment, for our bliss, for our edification, for our growth. It hardly seems that way today unless we can create a different frame of reference in which we can see this modern age as actually an eye blink in a much larger context. And that this moment of darkness is a necessary prelude to an awakening to love once more. But that the God we're looking for isn't going to come from out there somewhere. The God we are looking for is waiting for us to find that source within ourselves. And we can break through the shell of the ego. It is possible if we have the courage and the determination. But to do it, we have to be willing to surrender the illusion that we exist as separate beings. The barrier to God is the very individual self that's doing the looking. And because in this age we have so focused on that ego self as being what you live for and what is the reality, we have focused all our efforts in trying to support this illusion rather than to dispel the illusion and find the God. And so the more we are trying to support the false ego, the more alienated we get from the God self that we are. This is the great paradox. And yet we've come now to the exhaustion of the possibility of supporting the ego. the very society based on the ego is now collapsing all around us. It is proven to be unsustainable, because without love, there is no joining with nature. There has been a raping and pillage of nature itself on the basis of profit for the ego that has made life itself unsustainable. So we have reached the end of the line for egoic existence. And the only hope that is left is to return to the faith that beyond the ego, we will find what is real. And this too is what the great 20th century philosophers and psychoanalysts have found. But even knowing that intellectually is not enough, recognizing that we are trapped in a prison of language and of egoic desire that is a dead end is not sufficient. You still maintain that split-mindedness that doesn't want to let go its tenacious hold on those petty pleasures of the lower chakras that are the source of all of its suffering and all of its hopelessness at the same time. But it won't let go. It won't open the hand of thought, as that Zen book told us. It's really the hand of desire. It's not so much thought. And the hand of desire even is not the real thing. Underneath the desire is the anxiety that we won't let go of in faith and surrender to love. But if we're willing to make that shift, we will discover that that God that we have lost faith in is here. And the love is here, and the power is here. But it requires vehicles to flow through. And just like in our own yard, the water pipes have collapsed. Our pipes that connect us to God have collapsed. And they no longer function. They have to be rebuilt. And that's what we're doing in meditation. We're rebuilding the vessels that can connect us to the kundalini, to the prana, that can open up our hearts again, that can inflate the deflated soul so that the spirit can shine again in our minds and fill us with the power to persevere and to reach union with God and to live in a world that's full of obstacles and endless bureaucracy and suffering and impossibility of satisfaction or connection or making things work. That won't happen for a long time, but one can face it with the power to overcome that and create communal ties that will be able to forge a new way of living, even in the midst of this hell realm, that can be victorious if we're willing to dissolve the ego and enter into the larger life of the collective self that manifests God as a community, not as some isolated individual. So the Messiah will not come as one person. It will come as a community of enlightenment. And that's where the difficulty comes in, because then we really have to love. It's not just loving God in the abstract or the interior of my silence in my room alone, but it's loving God in all of you, who each of us has an ego that can be intolerable sometimes. How can I find the God within you when I see only the ego that is terrified or angry or impossible to batter down the walls of their defense mechanisms? And yet that is what we are called upon to do. And nothing else will do. And that's the power of love. That's the proof of its power. And unless we persevere in creating such a sacred community, there is no hope. And that's the basis and the teaching of all the religion. It's not just one person, it's a chosen people, but a people who choose themselves to be on the path of choosing God and surrendering their own egos to this larger divine project. Whether it's the Torah metaphor of leaving Egypt for the promised land, or it's the crucifixion, willing to carry our cross until we can bring down the Holy Spirit as a community in the Pentecost, or it's the Buddhist understanding of bringing the Maitreya into being through the community of Buddhas. However that metaphor is expressed, it's the same metaphor of reaching a state of non-duality here in the midst of this world of plurality that seems so alienating and so so lost, so full of individuals who are all shipwrecked on their individual islands in a sea of pain. And yet we can connect those islands with a bridge of love if we're willing to do it. But that takes the ultimate courage, it's the ultimate challenge, and it is the only way that we can find fulfillment in our lives and make this journey from lostness to foundness successful.